This is our third lesson concerning the question of, why are there so many churches in the world today? So far, we've approached the question by considering both history and the Bible. We began by observing the source of division that produced the various denominations of Christendom today in part one. And then we discussed why the Church of Christ is not one of those denominations in part two. But there remains a third element to address, and it is the question of, well, if the Church of Christ is not a denomination, well, then why are there different types of churches of Christ that exist? Well, sadly, this is a question that is often avoided or only spoken about in private circles. But all the brethren need to know the differences and the history behind them in order to be well informed. So that'll be the purpose of this lesson. First of all, we need to understand that with the prominent men of the Restoration Movement having successfully convinced numerous hearts and minds of God-fearing people to return to the Bible in order to restore the Lord's church in its original form, it was only a matter of time before departures would arise once again. And this time, the divergences came from within the church itself. As early as 1849, questions and opposing opinions had emerged concerning these things like congregational cooperation among the church's missions efforts, or whether or not musical instruments should be included in worship, and a host of many other methodological disputes. Well, sadly, this led to differing practices among the various congregations around the country. And so in 1906, the U.S. Census revealed just how far and wide the sectioning had reached. It exposed the fact that the Restoration Church had segmented into two very distinct groups. One was the Christian Church with the Disciples of Christ, and the other was the Church of Christ. Now, at the time, the primary differences between the two was instrumental music. Only the Church of Christ maintained the practice of a cappella singing in its worship. Now, secondly, and unfortunately, it didn't stop there. The sectioning continued among those two branches as multiple differing factions emerged from among the membership over the next few years. Basically, all the work that had been done to unify Christians in returning to the scriptural model of the church had fragmented. So among the churches of Christ, these differing factions grew in number during the early part of the 20th century. Now, to be fair, this is an almost predictable outcome when autonomy is being practiced. When an independent congregation starts working out their salvation, as Philippians 2:12 indicates, well, then strong opinions may develop over various scriptural interpretations, which may differ from others. This is even found among the seven churches of Asia, as we see in Revelation chapters 2 through 3, and in the church in Corinth in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 6. The various views that have emerged within the churches of Christ have led some groups to assign special identities to themselves, such as one cup congregations or mutual edification or non-class and even non-institutional. Thus, there are congregations that range from an extremely conservative position to a very liberal point of view in their beliefs and their doctrine and the way they practice. So as a result, it is unfortunate that the sign on the building that states Church of Christ does not always guarantee that the practices of that group are the same as those of another Church of Christ located somewhere else. Now, thirdly, the most tragic result of all this division is the lack of love and respect that is sometimes exhibited between the various factions, especially when a number of the variances are simply a matter of differing opinions. But sadly, those opinions have been turned into what's called tests of fellowship, where one group won't have anything to do with another just because of those differences. So in the end, what does this history lesson teach us regarding why are there so many churches in the world? Well, it teaches us that although God has given us the Bible, given it to all of mankind, we still haven't quite worked it all out perfectly. In fact, we're still learning. It also is an indication that Satan is still at work trying to destroy the church. That's the main lesson we should take from this. We should never discount the weaknesses that he exploits among the church's members. He is resourceful, and his evil devices are always at work. So the best way to defend ourselves against Satan's attacks is to study the Scriptures diligently, just like the Bereans did, as we read about in Acts chapter 17, verse 11. So remember, Jesus Christ clearly taught that only those who do God's will shall enter into heaven in Matthew 7, verse 21 through 23. That means that we must find God's will in His Word and then obey it if we want to be acceptable to Him. It's as simple as that.